Hey, good morning.
Good,
how are
good,
you? Can you hear
good
me
morning.
Okay?
Yeah.
Good. I had a little technical difficulty, but that's par for the course.
Yeah. No problem.
It's good practice for us old people.
Yeah, well.
It's the brain working.
I was on a laptop and now I've switched over to my phone. So let's see if I can make everything work.
I had to do that the other day. Hang on one sec. I'm going to close the door. Okay, I'm in a new location also, and I'm getting used to it.
Yes, sir, I completely understand. I'm doing the same thing. Well, listen, it's a pleasure to meet you, by the way.
Thank you very much. Nice to meet you, Derek.
Yeah, you're up in Indiana, is that what I understand?
Well, right now I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
So Nashville, okay.
Yeah, we just moved from Indianapolis to here.
Okay, well, good. That's really God's country, right?
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful. So my granddaughter's here, which makes it really good. So.
Oh, that's nice. Fantastic.
Yeah. So we have camp every afternoon.
Oh, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Really. I'm jealous.
Well, I love the fact that she's home because then her mother is home and her mother is, you know, teaching her all day and then I'm free. I have her at four to six is my time. So.
Okay. Well, you're a lucky guy.
Yeah.
That's your daughter, I'm assuming.
It's my daughter, Courtney. Yeah. Yeah. So we're at golf camp right
until
now.
I only
have two. Yeah. She's like a 9 month old now and we haven't been able to get out to Oregon. So that's been tragic, but.
Oh yeah, that's tough trying to travel to see family. Gosh,
I know. Mm.
Well, so it sounds like you're fortunate. So,
tell me, Cindy, what are we doing here, and what's the plan today?
Well, Derek's interested in learning more about our program and seeing if we can help him both on a leadership level as well as just as FA level.
Well, I was just going through the leadership program yesterday, Derek. It's interesting. And I'm reminiscing because I'm going through all my, you know, my 48 years of work in my, I was not a good person at throwing things away. So I brought everything with me and I'm in my office and I've been, relegated to it until it's organized and cleaned by my dictatorial wife. who
I've got one. Yeah.
And so I've got, she spent 3 years getting ready to move. I spent like, you know, a month. And so I made a deal with the guys, the movers, that they wouldn't tell her. And I just threw everything in boxes. And so it appears here. So we got rid of the, you know, the furniture and the big stuff, but all my boxes of all my memorabilia and all my gear and all my writings and everything is here. So I just was going through a Jedi course I took.
Jedi course.
Yeah. And then I was talking to John Cosgrove, Cindy, yesterday, who is writing a book on leadership. So we were discussing an article on values and purpose-driven leadership and the difference between a servant leader and a regular leader. And then he was doing some case study work on me.
So he was
interviewing me for it. So. John used to work for me. He ran the eastern part of Tennessee. So
that's fantastic.
Yeah. So really, really fun.
We're good. Well, listen, I am kind of humbled talking to you. You've had a lot more experience doing this, obviously, than I have. you know, and I've kind of grabbed a little of this, you know, trying to coach other people. I'm a producing branch manager down in Columbus, Georgia.
Right.
So we're about 90 miles south of Atlanta.
I did a little bit of homework on you, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So that's the way it appeared, and you've got a nice profile on your website. And so tell me, how long have you been managing?
I've been managing about 9 years.
That's enough. That's enough time, yeah. You know, to have made enough mistakes that you know what you're doing.
Oh, I've made plenty of mistakes. all the way up through yesterday, I'm still making them. So coronavirus adds a whole nother level of opportunities to make mistakes.
I can imagine. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? Learning from your mistakes. We never want to admit them, but wouldn't it be interesting to know everybody's mistakes and how they made them and what they learned from them? It might be a better leadership book than telling them everything they should do right.
You can still make a lot of mistakes trying to do the things that are supposed to be right.
Right.
You know, they sound great in your head, and then sometimes they don't come out as planned, or you don't get the reaction that you thought you'd get, or you misjudge the way somebody's going to react to something, how they're going to interpret something. So, yeah.
Well, coaching a six-year-old, you know, with all that I know about leadership and coaching, is really interesting because you're kind of working with a blank slate as your teacher. Teacher sports and life and things. So it's really, I'm paying attention, you know, you don't want to wreck this one. So.
No, I know. That's right. Good luck. 6 year olds. They're a little bit more malleable, you know.
Well, they're very fun because they want to be with you and, you know, just interesting things that come out of her mouth and watching her, you know, and seeing her skill level and her talent and other things. It's so fun. You never had time when I was your age, you know. I was so busy coaching and working and achieving and that you miss your own kids, you know, they grow up sort of like by magic and you think everything's going to be just fine and they are, but you kind of miss it. It's sort of sad when you think back on it, but anyway,
yeah.
I digress.
We just had our oldest just got married. I completely understand.
Oh, exactly. Wow. Yeah. It's like, wow. You know, where did that go? She was just six. Right. And all of a sudden she's getting married. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. You got a chance to make up for everything you did wrong. With grandchildren.
That's right. You know, it's funny because you say that, but I'm not sure I'm ready for them. You know, so.
Oh, wow.
I'm not old enough to have them, right?
So. Oh,
that's the catch 22 in here.
You want them. You want them as soon as you can get them.
Okay. I'll take your advice.
Yeah.
First words of advice from Rob Knapp. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you like? What would you like more? Would you like a leadership course? Or would you like to be coached as an FA, or would you like both?
I think I'd like to be coached as an FA, but then Cindy started talking about the leadership part when we discussed that I was a producing manager. So there's probably a lot to be gained from both sides of it because I am trying to coach these guys. I've got an older branch. I've got, you know, the average tenure of the advisor in my office is 30 years. I've got probably three that are in the 15-year range, and the rest of them are all, you know, 35-year veterans. So we've got teaming opportunities. We've just got different dynamics going on within our branch for sure. So as far as leadership and getting some outside advice, anything I can do to get better for them, I'm all open to. I mean, I'm all ears. I mean,
I always ask this question. When you walk in first thing in the morning, what do you think of? Do you think of your business or do you think of the branch?
You know, that's an interesting question. I would say first thing when I walk in, you know, I would say it's pretty close, but, more often than not, it's about clients. So it is my book of business, my clients. I spend a lot of time thinking about both. Okay. I don't know if it's haunted by both or
guilty
or thinking about both. Yeah. You know what
guilty,
I mean?
Feeling guilty all the time.
You do feel guilty a lot. That's exactly right. You know, you could have done more for your clients. I'm very busy. I'm responsible for a lot, and I don't feel like I am great at any of it right now.
You never feel done. It can never be done. Yeah. It can never be done. You never feel done. I liken it to mowing the lawn. You know, when you finish mowing the lawn, you look back, and if you've done a decent job, you're done. It feels good. And you put away the mower and you go in and have a beer or iced tea and you go, wow, that was good. I'm done. That's, if you do supernova properly, that's the way you feel every night when you go home.
That's what I guess that's what attracted me to it is, you know, and I was thinking about for this call, some of the experiences with other jobs that I had, you know, a long time ago in life. One of the great benefits to those jobs is you could actually finish at the end of the day, you know, have some sense of accomplishment.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll coach you as an FA. And then what I'd like you to do is, find another team that we could coach together following that. And at that point, I'll coach you as a manager. It'll take 2 years. You ready for 2 years?
Are you ready for 2 years?
Oh, I'm.
You know, you're gonna have your 6-year-old on one side, and you have me on the other side, thinking, God, which is worse? You know, I don't know.
No, it's
more.
It's a lot of fun. I don't do. We do this to raise money for my foundation. Speaking of that, Cindy, Nick Folks. I sent you an email to set up a call with him.
Right.
He's a black financial advisor that I coached several years ago. And we got talking the other day, and he's doing some work on mentoring. You know, it eventually it came down to, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement and helping. This is a very successful financial advisor who's been active in terms of trying to help others. And we started a foundation years ago to try and solve the same problem. There's just, you know, he said, I went to a Schwab conference and I was the only black guy there. And I said, yeah, you know, I got so frustrated as a manager that I had to come up with a program to develop young black guys and gals for the business. And it's, you know, it's a hard job. It's very hard to hire properly. When your pool is, you know, 8 people, your pool of white folks is, you know, 5,000, and your pool of black successful candidates that aren't already spoken for is like 8. So your pool is so small that you end up hiring and then they don't make it. So
they don't pan out. That's exactly right.
So one of the things that, my foundation has been dedicated to developing a young, diverse population that can go on, be successful, giving them a chance. So we give scholarships and it's been going on for a long, long time now, 15 years, I guess. And so that's where the proceeds of all my work goes. I don't take a salary. I haven't since I started this. And And so we fund the foundation and we try and do something. So I'm going to work with Nick to try and set up some internships with him in his business, or at least we're going to discuss it, because that's the piece that's missing, is to, and he can explain it better than I can, but I always thought that if we could spend 4 years of high school with a kid as an intern, by the time he went to college, he'd be comfortable. I call it comfortable in the living room. Comfortable in the living room, you know, of our house, which was the office. And he could look people in the eye and he would feel like it was home rather than some strange place. And, he explains it as, you know, people just don't, they look around, they don't see any white people, so they think this isn't a job for me. So anyway, that's sort of what we're doing this for. So I've still got tons of energy and love what I do and try and make a difference. And maybe Nick is Cindy. Maybe Nick is one of the people who can help solve our puzzle here, because it's kind of a tough puzzle. Anyway, so that's what we do. And it's been great. That's a whole nother book on what do you do in the second half of your life, right? Do something meaningful that will bring you satisfaction and joy. And I still, you know, you finish your career and you've got an entire 40 years of experience that you've documented or not documented. Anyway, we documented what we knew, and it's been great sharing it. It seems horrible to not share it. It seems like such a waste. Somebody comes, and I had great mentors, Larry Wilson and others that were terrific mentors for me, that, so I feel like I need to continue to give back and to mentor people like you, because then you go on and you change the lives of other people. And that's what it's all about. In our little way, we change the lives. So anyway, the first program to transition you from your best efforts to bring process to it, will be joined by our best efforts. And we go from chaos to process, and it takes about a year to really get it. And you'll be good at it, cause you have the right attitude. And so once serving your clients well, you'll learn how to coach your FAs, and then we'll coach an FA, and we could do that anytime you wanted to. I mean, if you said halfway through, I really want to coach, I want to try this and help you coach another team. Terrific. We can do that anytime, but let's start with you. And then that second year is we have a leadership program, and we kind of just take a lot of what we learned as a manager of clients, and we apply it to, and you'll see that. It all applies, same stuff. It applies to managing your FAs. So you do things though that you hadn't thought of. You know, it's like, whoa, that's a big commitment. Yeah, it is. But you don't try and do it all at once, and you don't try and do it with everybody. So you can only coach so many people. But you leverage your team more than you have in the past. So my players that I worked with, I really ask a lot of them, and they grew and became much more important, in the world than they thought they could. You know, you see more in them than you see in themselves, and you ask more of them, and all of a sudden they deliver more. And so now all of a sudden you've got a leader. So, you know, the people I coached and mentored, and they went on to run firms and, you know, run regions and do wonderful things. But, and even the administrators went on to do wonderful things. And that was the fun part. And So that's the second half, but let's concentrate on the first half. So the first half is 12 weeks of pretty intense work. And since you're going to teach it, we'll really ask you to learn it. Okay. So there's three books that you need to read. The Supernova Advisor, which you've read. The Supernova Multiplier, which is my newer book, which you may have read, but probably haven't.
I have not read that one.
And then the Supernova Teams, which Curtis Brown and I wrote. Together, and it's, that one will be more important than in terms of your managing than it is, you know, right now, as far as you're as an FA, but it's important as an FA. So there's a lot of how to's, you know, how do you hire, you know, exactly what's the best way to hire? So is it, you know, I'm proud of that chapter. Anyway, so it's more of a, it can be a reference book for you to look at when you've got issues and things you got to work on. The multiplier was written, okay, we've been doing this for 12 years now. What did we learn in the last 12 years of coaching? So it gives you everything that you need in terms of, okay, now I built this great service experience for clients. Now how do I grow? And so we focus on seven strategies for growing your practice. And then we use examples, real life examples from people that we coached, primarily at UBS, but at other firms too. Because that's where I did a lot of my work when I graduated from Merrill Lynch.
Graduated. I like how you put that.
Yeah. So the 12 weeks are, we spend 4 weeks on segmentation and then 4 weeks on organization and then 4 weeks on acquisition. But we're working even from day one on organization and acquisition. So we're simultaneously, think of it as three swimmers going down the pool simultaneously. So you've got Mr. Segmentation, Mr. Organization, and Mr. Acquisition, all swimming down the pool. So we're working on the whole process right from the beginning because we have to, because it all goes together. Mm-hmm. But we spend the first 4 weeks finishing segmentation. So however much you want to segment, we want to get it done in 4 weeks. We don't have to, but if not, then we really are multitasking all the way through. And then we spend 4 weeks on organization, and that is just getting our, make sure our team is organized, make sure we have our process organized. Then you will, by 4 weeks, you'll be already organized. And then we spend 4 weeks on acquisition, but we're, as I say, we're working on all three. All the way through. So it really comes together pretty nicely. Then we go once a month for the next 9 months. And that's when we go back and work on our purpose. Because unfortunately in the beginning, there's so much to do, busy work, that we don't have time to work on the important stuff, which is your values and your purpose-driven statement and your mission and your vision for the future. So we'll spend some time on that in that period, those 9 months. And we'll write a vision of where you want to be 5 years from now and where you want your team to be and what your mission is. And hopefully you can remember it. so you can articulate it consistently to your team. And that's important to you and to everybody else, because, you know, I developed my purpose statement back, long time ago now. And, you know, John Cosgrove asked me, you know, what is your, do you remember purpose, vision, mission, and all that? And I said, yeah, my purpose. And I told him exactly what my purpose was and my mission. And he went, wow, I remember that. I said, yeah, because we talked about it all the time.
Yeah, it was always on the tip of your tongue.
Right. And so that's really important as the leader, to be able to articulate that. And then what's our vision and where do we want to go and why are we going there? And that, I went back and looked at our rankings and how we were able to achieve what we were. And it was really very detailed every year, exactly what I wanted to accomplish, not just for myself, but for each player. I still had it written out in my notebook. You know,
it's fantastic.
How much I wanted each of my FAs to produce and where I wanted them to be in 5 years. And then I tracked it exactly where they were versus where I wanted them to be and where I thought they could be. So it was kind of intense. I was like, wow, you were really intense, weren't you? Yeah. Well, then, you know, then we were, and I had all of my reviews in there, my notes from my reviews and my ratings and everything, even how much money I made and exactly how it accumulated it. That was crazy.
I think, you know, it's important to keep a record of those. I went through and looked. So that's one of the things I don't do well, as I don't track. You know, I think being a producing manager for a group of senior advisors, sometimes you have the false thoughts that everybody's just got it together and they're running on their own, you know, accord and they've got it down. But, you know, the older I get and the longer I've been doing this now, I mean, you realize it's just not the truth. They do still need leadership, and accountability.
Yeah. I just saw a guy went from Merrill Lynch to First Republic, he was doing 18 million. And I knew him and I'm thinking, why would a guy leave Merrill Lynch doing $18 million to go to First Republic? And the answer is nobody challenged him. Okay. I don't know what his story is, right? But I don't think anybody's challenging these guys. So they get bored and they start to think so somebody from First Republic challenged him or maybe made him feel better about himself or did whatever, right? And so for doing $18 million of production, he still wants something different. And I doubt he went for the money, right?
Right, sure.
So he wanted something that he wasn't getting. And my suggestion is probably nobody said, why don't we do $30 million? Right? And then let's build a plan on how to do 30 million. Instead, they said, God, you're just wonderful and you're doing terrific and I'll leave you alone. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm guilty of that right there.
Yeah.
How can I support you? How can I be here instead of that challenge piece?
Right. Right. Cause everybody wants a coach, not a coach. See, everybody thinks they want a coach that's going to leave them alone. That's what I used to, when I used to recruit FAs, they'd say, so I say, what's, you know, relationship with your manager? And he said, oh, he leaves me alone. Mm-hmm. I'd say, good. I got an opportunity here.
Yeah, you do have an opportunity. It's those guys that I worry about.
Right.
I had I had that conversation yesterday. Yesterday was probably one of not the worst, but it ranked up. There's probably in the top 20 worst days, you know, from a management standpoint for me. Yeah. It's trying to, because, you know, we've sort of lost control of our branch.
Right.
Because we can't work from the branch. We're closed. We're effectively closed. And so, Morgan Stanley's made a decision. We pushed hard to get you know, a couple of the guys the ability to come in and work for a couple of days a week out of the branch. And, but that's not enough. They've continued to come in. And from my standpoint, I know we're a small branch. Common sense wise, we don't have clients coming in. It's very insulated. We have no problems. We sit all the way across from each other in the office. So Morgan Stanley tracks when they come into the branch, you know, they can see when they log on. So my boss, my manager, who is new to his role, you know, had to call them and I had to be on the phone with them. So I had two guys literally just packing up their offices. One guy completely packed up his office as if he was quitting. You know, and it's like, why are you so upset? But then as I'm talking to him, it's not really so much about, he's looking for a, I don't know if he's looking for an argument point or a decision point or something that's going to help him out the door. But then as we got further into the discussion, he's underpricing his business. He's underserving his clients. He doesn't have the, you know, he feels like the only way he can serve his clients is by giving them a low cost option. And, but
bad self-image
just hit me in the back of the head, you know, what I hadn't been doing for the guy. And he said, you know, he has been the, just like you said, you know, management leaves me alone. That's what he has asked for his entire career, is to be left alone. And so when I originally started, you know, when you're a young manager, you're recognizing, you're tracking, you're celebrating accomplishments and all that stuff. You're very public about things. But as you kind of get to know the guys and their personalities and stuff, you tend to back off. But he mentioned, he said, you know, you gave me this bottle of wine. And I'm like, well, that must have been 8 years ago. What are you talking about? But he still remembers it, you know. And like, you're the guy that doesn't need recognition, that wants to hide out in the corner and not, you know, you'd rather people not know you're there. But it's not true. You know, and it just hit me hard yesterday. So anyway, yeah, rough day for me. But
yeah, and you know, it's, you know, so much of today they're doing what I call speed bump management, you know, which is, we had a woman that would race through our little, I live on an island and I live in a community inside the island. So my children claim that I live in a bubble, that I don't really know the world. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of true, right, Cindy? And in that insulated world, we had a woman that would race to church every morning. All the things to be racing to, right?
Yeah, right.
Killing a family or something as she races to her, it traces to save her soul. And so instead of putting a cop out there and stopping her and teaching her a lesson, they put in speed bumps. And so the whole community now bumps their heads on their roofs of their golf carts. And remember how much we hate this woman for going fast, you know.
Yeah.
So I call that speed bump management. Instead of solving the problem, we solve. So instead of dealing with the issue of coronavirus, we make rules, and everybody has to suffer because of that.
That's exactly right.
And so, And with the computers today, there's no way that you can really run the office. You know, that should be your judgment as to how.
Absolutely.
Right.
And because, that's what's been frustrating. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, guys go, they got nothing to think about. So they go, you know what? I always used to say that it's 70% the firm pushing the person out and 30% somebody pulling them out. And the more they get their arms around the idea of leaving, like you said, they start to justify it with little things, and they pile on things you wouldn't notice. They start to notice, yeah. And all of a sudden they're gone and you're like, what the hell happened?
Yeah. No, it's exactly right.
So
exactly right.
Well, you'll see that when we set up our folders and we start to really develop our relationships with our existing clients, that's exactly the way we should do it with our FAs. So if we're doing a 12-4-2 with our clients, we should be doing a 12-4-2 with our FAs. And like I said, you can't, typically you've got to use the rest of your team in doing that because there's only so much time in the day for you. So you are one of the people giving 12-4-2s, but you teach your team to be coaches. And then they have the ability to deliver that kind of experience. So you'll see how that unfolds. But instead of, you know, it being a bottle of wine, you know, it's regular client contact, regular relationship building over time based on their goals and what they want to accomplish. And even if it's just a check-in, at least you made the check-in.
Yeah. And that's what really attracted me to this, Rob, is the relationship building. My best friend is a pastor here in town. And, you know, coronavirus aside, I mean, the man can stay in contact. He knows everything that's going on in your life, your children's life, your grandchildren's life, and your parents' life. I mean, he's made contact. My mother will reach out and go, hey, I got a call from, you know, Jimmy, my pastor. You know, I'm like, well, what did he call you for? Just to check on me. You know, I'm like, are you kidding me? How is he doing this? He didn't have time to, you know, I don't know how he has time to sleep.
Well, it's extraordinary when you meet people like that. And what you find out that prospecting is really friend making. And the problem with most financial advisors is they say, you know, I've given this guy eight referrals over the years and he's never given me anything. And I ask him, is he a friend? And they go, well, what do you mean? You know, what do you do with a friend? How often do you call a friend?
Yeah, often.
When do you check in? Right.
Often, yeah.
Okay, see, so when we prospect, see, when I set up my prospecting model for you, we're going to check in every month with anybody that we think is a center of influence. And they go, wow, isn't that a lot? You know, I had one guy say to me, I want to set up a system where I only ask for introductions once a year. Make sure I don't ask more than that. I said, why would you do that? Do you think he has no one that needs you? Do you think your pastor only asks for an introduction once a year?
Right.
He probably never asks, but he's always interested. He's connecting. See, he's a connector. He's a problem solver. Watch how he works.
A huge connector.
He's a problem solver.
You know, one of the things that I'm guilty of too is that, you know, early on in my career, I think my natural network was just bigger. You know, whether it was through school, church, you know, all these things that I did naturally, civic organizations, you know, leadership positions. And then as I've gotten older and, you know, you have your client base and you're doing okay, you know, and so it's amazing how that you tend to get here.
Right.
And then you're pretty comfortable operating in here. And
you
stop. And then eventually that circle just starts. I feel like it starts to close in.
Think about your 90-year-olds. How big is their circle?
Yeah, it gets smaller. I mean, they're out on an island, right? A postage stamp in the end, right? I mean, that's it.
But the ones that are the happiest at 85 and 90, they're continuously increasing their circle. You know, somebody asked my mom, you know, how is that you're so happy at 85 or whatever? And she said, you know, when you've lost so many friends. And she said, oh, I just make new friends.
You have to keep making new friends. Have you read the book Younger Next Year?
Yes. I give that out.
Yeah, I do too. Retire. I send it to my clients who retire, especially the men, of course, that because they're like scratching their heads. What am I going to do? You know, I'm like, okay.
Right. I'm gonna call this. Sorry. I'm gonna call him back. So I think that's, I've got another call at 8. We probably won't use this time if we can avoid it because it's a little early in Central Time. So we'll probably use this day though. To fit you in. So why don't you set it up with Cindy to take care of the details, and she kind of runs my calendar for me. But I think you're a great candidate for this. So we'll have full disclosure, and you know, we'll be very candid with each other about what we've done right and wrong. And I think this has been very productive for me anyway.
Well, good for me too. I mean, it is, it's a pleasure to meet you too. Seriously. And I'm humbled that I'm even having a little call with you here. So
it's great. Yeah. I'm excited. You're a good human being, and you've got all the right intentions. So I think we can do very well together. I look forward to it, Derek. Okay.
I do too, Rob. Great. Thank you so much. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye bye.